In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We remember Dr. Carmen Bolter, who passed in 2022. Dr. Bolter was a frequent guest in the early years of this show, discussing her very popular documentary series, The Pyramid Code. Her next project, titled Atlantis Rising, was presented on many shows, including George Norrie's Beyond Belief series. The views of Dr. Carmen Bolter and past guest Dr. Mary Hardy were very similar. I wish they'd met. That would have been a supreme meeting of the minds. In her book, Pyramid Energy, Dr. Hardy agrees with Dr. Bolter that the pyramids were energy generators. Dr. Hardy discusses the chakras of the earth. Chakras are vortexes, she writes, and they can be balanced with a medicine wheel. Medicine wheels are often made with small boulder stones placed in a circle with stone lines crossing in the center. The location is determined by divining rods most of the time. This balance in the land creates an energetic harmony for crops, wildlife, and weather. Dr. Hardy writes, quote, "Scientists haven't expanded their wisdom into believing our planet is a living crystal of vortex energy. It's time we learn to use this wisdom of vortex energy so that mankind can achieve the process of transmutation and levitation. But first, one must believe phenomena exist," end quote. Quote, "The mystery of thought is vortex energy. The human aura is a standing columnar wave of chakra energy. Without this energy field, thought wouldn't exist. The creative force in the universe is a vortex. The secret of transmutation and levitation is achieved when one understands vortex energy. This is why the statement, quote, the kingdom of heaven is within. Learn to control the vortex energy of the chakras through thought, and you can control transmutation and levitation. Mankind will then achieve mind over matter." In another section of the book, Dr. Hardy explains living waters and the spin factor in water based on the work of naturalist Victor Schauberger. She writes, quote, "Water creates this natural spin by completing its full cycle. According to Schauberger, the water cycle, from the earth to the atmosphere and back again, is either completed as a full cycle or remains a half cycle. The full cycle can only take place where there is the appropriate vegetation cover to allow the rain to penetrate deeply, and it will in turn encourage natural vegetation and conditions of water runoff. In the full cycle, when water falls to earth as precipitation, it drains through the soil, sinking deeper and deeper through rapid cooling until it reaches a level where the weight of the water mass above equals the pressure of the deeply drained water. The latter, warmed by the earth's heat and as its specific weight falls, wants to rise. During heating, the water is able to attract and bind metals and salts. In fact, the water has been partially converted to steam during heating and comes into contact with the carbon beneath the earth, causing a reaction. This reaction means the oxygen in the water separates from the hydrogen, and then the damp hydrogen gas forces its way toward the Earth's surface in a spinning vortex with tremendous pressure. Thus, carbon dioxide is released for the deeper drainage basins. At the same time, surrounding salts are dissolved and carried away with the gas to be deposited again in layers near vegetation. This is how a constant supply of nutrition is made available for vegetation and deposited at the root level. It is the spiral energy in the water that allows this process to happen. We hear the first interview on this show with Dr. Bolter from March 2012, And in the second hour, we hear open lines with the great listeners and callers living in the New York City area. You're going to hear references to how the six pyramid sites in Egypt were passive energy generators when the Nile River flowed at the foot of the Sphinx. Dr. Bolter describes the same process of how the energy would, quote, blow the water molecule apart, and they were able to harness the hydrogen. Dr. Bolter has directed, produced, and written an important five-part television series titled The Pyramid Code. This documentary examines how the Great Pyramid served as an energy generator. It was built on intersecting ley lines constructed from specific materials and is now thought to have harnessed and stored power created by the interaction of sunlight on water moving through passageways to build a charge using large crystal structures. This is very similar to Ross Hamilton's research, a past guest who talked about the pre-American civilizations and giants. Nikola Tesla's work is referenced in this series, specifically the Wardenclyffe Tower on Long Island. We also talk with Dr. Bolter about her work investigating the sacred feminine in ancient Egypt and goddesses around the world. She's the author of Angels and Archetypes, an evolutionary map of feminine consciousness that looks back into the matriarchal cultures in pre-dynastic Egypt, prehistoric Greece, and other parts of the world. Dr. Carmen Bolter, welcome to In Other News.
Hi.
Well, I really appreciate you being on the show. Can you tell listeners a little bit about how you became involved with this documentary, The Pyramid Code?
Well, it's actually my life's work. I started having past life memories of Egypt when I was 6 years old, and I've now been there 27 times, and I just can't leave it alone. The Pyramid Code is a five-episode documentary series that's aired on television in 29 countries, already been translated into several languages, and now there's a 21-country Asian deal on the table and a 35-country Russian and Latvia, Estonia, all those countries. A lot of popularity with it. A documentary channel in the U.S. is renewing. They played it already. And so I'm quite pleased, and I certainly have had thousands of emails from people who appreciate it.
You've done so many interviews on this, and I listened to a few of them. It's just so fascinating. Some of the things that you often bring up, and it's revealed in your documentary, is the ley line connection of the pyramids, how they – I think the Great Pyramid is on an intersection of ley lines. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the research in this documentary about the pyramids being energy generators?
Yes. The technical term is continuity discontinuities, and what that means is that there's various ley lines on the planet that network all the way around the Earth, and there was a series of pyramids that were actually energy generators, and they all coordinated, and the Great Pyramid is Grand Central Main Station, and they were covered in casing stones and built with various different kinds of stones that generate energy and crystalline matrices inside the granite. And then the limestone that went, sorry, I'm forgetting now, the white Tura limestone, that's right, was the insulation on the outside. So during the 7th century and the 11th century AD, a lot of these stones were just taken off the Great Pyramid, and so it's now rendered in a state where it's not nearly as effective as it was. And also the energy of the entire planet has been gone down to a lower vibration. But in their heyday, they were like a relay station of generating power, but it was not the same kind of static power, static electricity like we have. It was a passive implosion power, which is sustainable and free.
Passive implosion power. You had pointed out there are descending passageways below the pyramid that contact underground aquifers, and can you explain how that is used in this system?
Yeah, well, underneath the entirety of the Giza Plateau, but also north and south, all the way to Abu Roush, there are six pyramid sites with 22 pyramids altogether, and there's a honeycomb of passageways, some man-made and some from a limestone aquifer that were just kind of carved out by the erosion of water. And the shape of the zigzag pattern of the honeycomb actually, when they put the granite stone in there, was building a charge and building a charge and building a charge. And the Nile used to flow right at the foot of the Sphinx. And so when the Nile would flood, it would fill up these passageways and it would create this charge of energy, which when it entered the Great Pyramid, eventually blew the water molecule apart and they were able to harness the hydrogen. It's actually been shown, Victor Schauberger has done a lot of work with cumulative energy in water, and there's quite a few people who have been examining this and how it was a hydraulic system of charged energy. They actually had capacitors. It's fascinating, but there's quite a few people actually that are trying to recreate the system to prove how it worked.
You know, I was going to ask you that. I know you referenced Tesla's Wardenclyffe Tower in Long Island. That has been dismantled, of course, no longer exists. But you referenced that because that also had underground passageways connecting to an underground aquifer. Is that something people are trying to reproduce, something similar?
Well, there's that, but there's also just the nature of the shape and the passageways in the Great Pyramid lend themselves to it being a form of a pump. And Chris Dunn has shown how the shafts inside the Queen's Chamber and the King's Chamber actually had a little door and hooks. Gattenbrink's robot went up in there, and Upinot went up in there, and it seems to be like a switch that would change the flow, reverse the flow of the chemical reaction that was going on inside the pyramid. The other thing is when the pyramid was first opened, through forced entry, they found white powder all over the King's Chamber and a salty kind of substance inside the Queen's Chamber. And so it really seems that there was some kind of chemical reaction going on in there.
Our past guest, Peter Champeau, whose website is Geometry of Place, he pointed out that the telluric energy flows south, I guess in the northern hemisphere, down the ley lines. And in the evening, at night, it flows north. And I wonder if they knew that this polarity existed amid these ley lines that they're sitting on, these pyramids are sitting on. Did you explore that?
Yes, I'd have to say that they knew a lot more than we've given them credit for. But one of the things that's true is as soon as the sun sets on the Giza Plateau, the energy shifts. And my interest was always going on to the plateau at 5 o'clock when it closed. Now it closes earlier. And I spent a lot of my research time, a lot of the field work that I did in and out of the passageways that are underneath the Giza Plateau at night, simply because the energy clears in a different way. So absolutely, there's a reversal of the flow, and it's much more poignant, if you will, at night.
You made connections to the Coral Castle in Florida, and we're jumping into another area of technology, but it's still connected here, and that is the technology of putting these blocks together and how they were moved. Once again, this groundbreaking documentary that you've been at the lead in creating, the Pyramid Code, you dove right into this as well. Can you tell listeners about the similarity here between Coral Castle and the stones in Egypt?
Yeah, and I think both Leetskallion and Tesla were remembering something from Egypt. And Leetskallion did all his work. It must have been some kind of anti-gravity because he lifted all these stones himself. He always worked alone. And then he moved the whole thing. They decided to relocate the entirety of these huge megalithic stones, and he did it himself. Now, there is a video on YouTube that shows something that's very similar to the crystal bowls that are found at Abu Ghraib that have these, they're circular, and then they have these bumps and impressions and bumps and depressions all the way around. Leetskallion had a system of round magnets that sat inside this circle that were evenly distributed that was part of his machinery that was found. Now, he's passed away, and he died with his secret, but they have found things that he worked with. And so, for sure, it has something to do with anti-gravity, which to the ancient Egyptians wasn't such a mystery because it has to do with the transmutation of the atom, as does alchemy and manifestation and bilocation and telepathy and teleportation. So these were the cities, the SIDHIS, that allowed for different devices, working with sound and light technology, and the human resource of the high-level initiates. They were able to generate fields. Now, the fields within fields within fields. So we're talking about the energy grid that's connected to the worldwide grid, and we're talking about the energy system of the trained initiates, and all of this would work together, which would allow them to have big lifters and smaller nudgers. And part of this is stimulated from my past life memories, but it's also been shown to be true. So Lead Scallion was doing something similar.
You bring up the word transmutation. We often use that, especially at the atomic level, an important word to understand when we were talking about cold fusion. But in this case, and you were mentioning the magnets in sort of the gears, that seemed like some kind of magnetic lubricant or something. Does it seem like that to you?
Yes. Yes, and magnetism is a passive force as well. So it's a natural force. So the Egyptians were working with nature, and in the ancient language, the Great Pyramid was called Per-Neter, which means house of nature. It's replicating, you know, the distance to the moon, the circumference of the earth, the Fibonacci sequence, the phi ratio. All of these different things are replicated in this very sophisticated, huge stone instrument that's been built so that it can't be destroyed. It's endured several world floods. They even tried to bomb it, and nothing, it couldn't shake down. It's endured earthquakes and various things as well, and so it's as solid as can be.
Now, you mentioned that people are trying to duplicate this sort of energy generation from the model of the Great Pyramid. Where can we find that information?
There's a gentleman named John Canman who lives outside of Seattle, who has a video, a YouTube video, that's showing how it's working like a pump. But the big champion of all of this is Chris Dunn, who wrote a book called The Giza Power Plant. He is actually trying to make a full-scale model of the Great Pyramid to show how it would have been a generator of energy.
How's he doing with that?
Well, it's a slow go, and it takes a lot of funding and time to figure it out, but he's building it.
Well, we often discuss the poisoning of the air and the food and water on this show, and you mentioned that in a prior interview that humanity is heading for another golden age. Do you think there are connections here to suppress that, and is this ancient knowledge returning to us as we're now bathed in cell phone tower and other wireless radiation?
Yeah, we're at an interesting crossroads, I'll tell you that, because it seems like we've just gone to the lowest of low levels with the possibility of thermonuclear war and financial fraud running rampant and everything else. So, yes, we're toxic beyond, and yet we're just about to turn the corner to return to a new energy. And so the galactic alignment is December 21st, 2012, as many people have been talking about, but it actually is something that I've demonstrated in Starry Night Pro, where there is an exact alignment with our sun and the center of the galaxy, which is a place where some people say stars are born, and that's where we're returning to. And so it's forcing the fact that the energy must shift. And so the dark is in their last kicks, and the new energy is upon us. But we have been so sufficiently dumbed down and toxified with, you know, fluoride calcifying the pineal gland, which is our connection to spirit, that it's like a whole bunch of people are shut down. And so when this new energy is coming to them, it's just bouncing around them. There's not that many people that are actually able to process this without having what I call systemic distress. So the system's coming to get us. You know, if one person in our family has cancer, then the whole family has it. You understand what I'm saying? So with pharmaceuticals and antidepressants and all of this, it's almost like this enormous counterforce that's trying to prevent us from becoming empowered humans, which is really what the ancient Egyptians were showing us, is how they could be fully realized. And they had 360 senses, not five. So to have a memory of how that used to work and to see that we're almost able to grasp it with all these forces coming and biting us around the ankles, if you will, is quite a phenomena.
It is. I'm glad you brought that up. What is Starry Night Pro for the listeners?
It is a full-scale system of the stars that can date back to 99,000 BC and to 99,000 AD, and you can set the extragalactic grid and the various planets and star systems and line it up, so it's and run it backwards and forwards. You can actually set it so that you can see how the galactic alignment works and when. So when people say, no, it's at 11:11 on December 21st, well, maybe that's New York time, but the actual alignment, so it's the minute the sun sets at Giza, which is 5:30, and you can see it right in the program, that the alignment is off until it's exact, and that's when it is.
Wow, that is incredible. Thank you for confirming that. Your work in the sacred feminine in ancient Egypt and goddesses around the world is another very important area that you've devoted a lot of energy to. And I wanted to ask you if you suspect that the creation of these pyramid type of energy generators that use the Earth's natural forces were influenced by a matriarchal-based society.
Well, I'd have to say yes. Now, matriarchy is not the opposite of patriarchy, where women are dragging men around by their hair and like that. It's not power over. It's empowerment from within. And one of the things that matriarchal culture and ancient Egyptian culture insisted on was a balance between the masculine and the feminine, which is yin and yang. And the energy between that, between the two forces, is what builds all this power. Now, when we think of alchemy, and even people who are practicing it now, they're typically men. But it's interesting that I've gotten three letters from women this week saying, wait a minute, the magi, the original alchemists, were women. And I'm inclined to agree. Now, what's true is that the feminine, the high-level initiates, were trained separately from the masculine, but then they would come together when they were doing these high-level energy. They became part of the circuitry. So I've used this metaphor before. Neural synapses don't touch each other. They create a hormone that jumps across. And it's like the high-level initiates were human divining rods. And the system was passive, but it didn't work without them. And so that is really empowering to think. The humans were able to connect the cosmic energy and ground it into the earth and take the telluric energy and send it up into the heavens. And so without the human divining rod, the whole thing wasn't going to work. And without the masculine and feminine yin and yang flow, it also wouldn't work. But that's the essence of matriarchy. And matriarchy was about leaving more for the children, honoring the wisdom of the elders, and seeing that evolution was through younger generations. So in our culture, it's like, you know, use it all up, throw it away, and it doesn't matter. And if you don't get caught, it's not wrong. Well, in the matriarchal cultures, it was the system of Maat, M-A-A-T, who's the goddess, living in truth. And so you can't hide, because the truth is the truth. What I think we have now is the failed experiment of the last 5,000 years of patriarchy that was looking for blood from death instead of blood from life. So the highest form of DNA is menstrual blood, and that's been demonized and, you know, made to see it as yucky. But, you know, in matriarchal times, they were actually using it to fertilize the earth and plants and that sort of thing. And so whenever you see somebody who's killing a sacrificial lamb or something like that, they're trying to get blood from death when the patriarchs took over and said, oh, that's sacred feminine stuff, we don't need it.
Thank you for explaining that. That's critical information there. A past guest had mentioned also that the creation of these megaliths that connect the lithosphere to the magnetosphere were often used and are now used by the Masons. And they're positioned on specific lines, ley lines, that in a past show were mapped out here in the area, the region around New York City. And he says they've imbued a particular consciousness through ritual on these lines. What is the power of imbuing the consciousness within a ley line? How powerful is that?
Well, now everything's crisscrossed and kind of, we're at the lowest possible level right now. We're at the bottom of the cycle and just about to turn. And so even the Egyptians had, you know, the Amun is the dark, and now we're just about to go into Heper, which is the sunrise again. And so whatever we're talking about in terms of ley lines and dark forces, consciousness, whatever, is scrambled right now. We've got, you know, HAARP and all these different systems, chemtrails that are, you know, kind of scrambling everything, and I think many people do feel scrambled. So it's impossible to compare that to the Golden Age when it was peaking and everything was more refined, and so they had higher levels of consciousness. You know what I'm saying is that it's entirely possible for dark negative forces to spoil things, and so we really have a lot of cleaning up to do. I'm looking forward to that.
I am as well, and I hope that we have the opportunity to do that, even though it seems like it could be a really big job. But who knows? It might be something to easily leverage. We'll have to see. We'll have to wait and find out. You mentioned in the documentary, or I think a past interview, but you mentioned that when you're in Egypt, they don't have all three of the Great Pyramids open. Can you tell listeners a little more about that?
Well, the pattern with the Supreme Council of Antiquities, when Zahi Hawass was the director for many, many years, was to block energy and to always have one pyramid closed, and they'd say supposedly for restoration. And so basically they're kind of crippled. They're also doing secret work in there and trying to find passageways. Zahi was convinced that he was going to find the mummy of Khufu inside the Great Pyramid. They've never found a mummy in a straight-sided pyramid. They aren't tombs. They've never been tombs. That's not what they are. But there was lots of burlap sacks of ground-up stone and passageways that were drilled into in the Great Pyramid. So I think when they, and the other pyramids as well, so when they close the pyramid, they're actually up to no good in there, I think.
Oh, I got you. They don't want anyone to see what they're doing. And you pointed out also that when the pyramids were discovered in the early 1900s, they were sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And they attempted to use explosives to get inside. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was before that. So even 708 AD with Saladin, they were trying to get inside the pyramids, but they couldn't. There was nothing they could do to get inside. And so in a true patriarchal fashion, they actually took explosives and tried to bomb their way in. And even today, the passage where the entrance to the Great Pyramid is a forced entry. And so it almost looks like a cave when you first go in, and then it opens up into the rest of it. So it was sealed from the inside.
So over time, the particular rock layers that would be very important for the conductivity of this energy generator, that is the Great Pyramid, were slowly dismantled and rendered less potent over time. And so you have these relics of what must have been really a wonderful instrument to create a passive energy system around the world. And as you pointed out, this was Grand Central, which I never thought about it like that, but it really starts to make sense. And your work is really some of the best I've ever seen. And I've sent your documentary to other links to your documentary to other people, and they're very thankful because you really uncovered some of the most important information I think of our time. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to open up the phone lines. Are you ready to take calls?
I sure am.
How you doing, Dr. Volta?
Hello.
Yeah. I just had two questions, basically. Number one, where do you believe that the ancient peoples ascertained all this knowledge from? Was it just from natural observation?
What's your name?
Due to the relative short time that man as a species has been on the planet, it seems to be like a terrific amount of knowledge to contemplate in such a short period of time. And what will be, or what do you believe will be one of the signs that we're coming out of this period of darkness and into this new golden age where we rediscover this ancient knowledge that apparently was lost to the sands of time?
Well, thank you for two excellent questions. I agree with you that it seems like an awful lot of knowledge to just have, but I do think mankind has been on the planet a lot longer than anyone is admitting. And Michael Cremo is showing the extreme antiquity of humanity, and anthropology and archaeology, if things don't add up to the accepted theories, they just bury what they find. One of the things that's true about ancient Egypt is it came in full form. It didn't gradually grow and then began to deteriorate from that high period. So it invites the idea that perhaps there was a top civilizing effort that came from elsewhere. And I don't know that that's too far-fetched. Certainly, with the energy fields in the Golden Age being more refined, as I mentioned in the interview, it stands to reason that they would have been able to access higher levels of consciousness, 360 senses instead of five, and be able to use the transmutation of the atom, which would invite levitation and that sort of thing for the pyramid stones. So the jury's not out on whether it was from other places, if they had guides from other cultures and other planets. I'm not going to say that.
Well, that's where you start to lose me, to be honest with you, because, you know, I mean, I can't see why an alien civilization would imbue such knowledge on another primitive alien civilization. It just doesn't, you know, to me, it doesn't factor as being intuitive.
Okay, well, I didn't say that I thought that that's necessarily what happened. I said I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't agree with that, then that's your prerogative. In terms of signs for returning to a golden age, we've been tumbling down for 13,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's signs, and that's what 2012, December 21st, sunset, Giza, is supposed to be the turning point and climbing into more light. But that doesn't mean that we arrive at the golden age right away. So it's going to take a long time for the energy to build, and we've got a big mess to clean up. But I do think that as soon as there's a little bit more light, even in the northern hemisphere, when we're approaching winter solstice near Christmas, it gets darker and darker and darker, and it's very oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're lighting candles and putting lights on our Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we hit the solstice point and it starts to get a little more light, then we start to feel better. And so I think when we're moving in the direction of better, we're going to start really feeling that there's a difference. But I think it'll be subtle and gradual, and I don't think our problems are going to disappear overnight.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Ed, thank you very much for those questions. And you're on the air with Dr. Bolter.
Yes, Dr. Bolter, I was wondering if you would have any comments on matriarchal society and Lilith, and perhaps if you could tell us the definition of Lilith. The second question was if you had any familiarity or comments on the work of E. Raymond Kapp with the Great Pyramid Decoded and the Judeo-Christian references that he makes therein.
Okay, well, I'm not familiar with that work. But in terms of Lilith, I have a chapter in my book, Angels and Archetypes, An Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness, about Lilith. And she is a goddess that refuses to be put down. And if somebody's trying to control her, she puts herself into self-imposed exile. In other words, she just runs away. And so she's an archetypal energy that refuses to allow the patriarchal energies to suppress her. And I think that's quite valuable. And in matriarchal cultures, it wasn't about women having power over the man, but it was about balance. But as things began to deteriorate and patriarchal pockets started popping up in various places, I think that the women became Amazons, and they kind of ran away from the men again. And then they would get together with them just to mate, and then they would give the boy children back and only keep the female children. And so Lilith was of that style of woman, a virgin goddess, which is a woman who belongs to herself. And so she wasn't going to go off with a man and let herself be controlled. And so that's how that archetype fits with matriarchal consciousness. And I'm sorry, I can't comment on the author that you mentioned.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you for that call. By the way, our guest is Dr. Carmen Bolter. She is the writer, producer, director of the 5-part documentary series called The Pyramid Code. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Dr. Bolter.
Hello.
Don't you find it a little interesting? I noticed that it's hard to give that ancient civilization credit for the research and the discoveries. Now, if, like you said, man has been here for far longer than we suspect, just like Newton, you know how the story goes, the Apu falls, and then he contemplated and he discovered, or he... research gravity, put it that way. It's the same thing. If it's been millions of years and you give man enough time to think, or woman, enough time to think as things happen and they think it through, you give them millions of years, you have discovery. It's as simple as that. But it's attributed to, and I'm not associating you with this, but it's attributed to ancient extraterrestrial civilizations. Now, if you think it through, if that was the case then, that should be the case now. you can't have it both ways. You can't say that it was due to ancient extraterrestrial civilization who brought this information to the Egyptians, and then today, no, it's due to man's pure intelligence. It doesn't make sense. You can't have it both ways. They either receive that information from extraterrestrial civilization.
Right. We understand what you're saying.
Now.
Okay, and that's a very valid point. Now, we have distorted in this culture what it means to channel and what any kind of ET visitation is through the suppression of disclosure. And there are many countries in the world right now, Brazil, Argentina, the UK, lots of places in the world, Russia, that have opened up their UFO X-files. But in the States, and even Canada has disclosed, there really is a taboo against discussing this. Now, there's many people who claim to be channeling Archangel Michael, Mother Mary, various entities. And there are many, inventions that scientists will, be going to sleep and can't figure out the solution, and then they get an aha. Or songs like the Fifth Dimension singing the Age of Aquarius, where they're kind of getting inspiration. We don't know where they're getting inspiration from, but we're not allowed to say where that comes from. So I'm not saying that we've got ETs, and only malevolent ETs is what the media is pushing on us, is that they're coming to get us and eat us and kill us and all of that. And so I don't really think we've got clarity on the role of higher intelligences that can interface with us here on Earth at present. However, I do see lots of evidence in ancient Egyptian culture where they honored incarnate and disincarnate beings, and they didn't have a word for death. They called it westing. But they would practice what it took to go to the other side. They were understanding, and a life's work was about being prepared to cross over, because they understood that you transitioned, but you didn't really die. And so in the Council of Nicene in 323 AD, Emperor Constantine outlawed reincarnation, killed anybody who believed in it. So we're not allowed to think that way, and that runs deep in our cellular memory. But I do think that the ancient Egyptians felt quite comfortable with, conversing with disincarnate beings. I think that the distortion is cultural.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, caller, for that. And I just wanted to add, the other influence here touched on a bit the past life memories. Sometimes that will have an influence. We got another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
I just have a question. I want to know what you think about, with all this new knowledge coming into play, the internet, and after the 60s, these yogis coming into America and trying to spread this love and collective consciousness. Do you feel like it has anything to do with the upcoming of this new age, is 2012, maybe having to play in with maybe these ancient aliens are trying to psych us up and trying to get us ready to evolve as a species so that we ourselves can have world peace, so that there might be like intergalactic peace, and we're kind of led into a thing that we weren't led into before?
You're jumping around in a lot of different subject areas there. I think that if there are, it stands to reason that there are other cultures, other places. There's plenty of people who have filmed spaceships. The Bible talks about it throughout history. Even the Egyptians were well-versed in that, as we've mentioned. So the idea that we've been visited and that there's other civilizations in other galaxies isn't new. However, if we are behaving in a destructive mode, that doesn't just affect the Earth. That affects the solar system. That affects the galaxy. And so we have been misbehaving. And thermal nuclear war would destroy things to the point where, much of the population of the Earth would perish over time because there's no more food and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And so I think that there is a bit of an imperative to get us to wake up and turn the corner and have world peace. But I also think that, having been to 52 countries and traveled all over the world for many years, everyone wants the same thing. We all want peace, and we all want respect. But there's a force, a negative force on the planet that's preventing that from happening. And
I think that also might have something to do with extraterrestrials as well.
Well, I know that it's very difficult to speak definitively on this topic since all the books have been closed and the files are sealed and you're not allowed to talk about it.
Right.
It's very difficult to say anything conclusive.
Right.
However, this idea that the extraterrestrials are malevolent, I think, is skewed. I'm more inclined to think that they're benevolent because they're more sophisticated than we are, and they've come.
I would think so too.
Yes, and so they want to come to help, and we want to shoot them down, and then
right.
steal their technology, and then not give humanity the technology, and make us pay a lot for utilities while free energy is there. Like, there's a distortion here. There's
yeah.
something controlling the planet that's preventing the real truth from coming out. So I think that the awakening is happening. It's been happening,
right.
but it's not in the media.
No,
because
it's not.
The cabal is keeping the media shut down.
Yeah,
and
I feel like one of the biggest things that these 11 beings have given upon us would be, you know, things like the Om and things like transcendental meditation and astral projection. I feel like these are like really cool things that they might have given onto us, is so that
well,
in order
yes.
we can.
Yes, but it's natural. Like, I was into all this stuff when I was 16, and that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so I was already inclined toward it. And then when, you know, tarot cards came out, or even being a vegetarian, I was jumping all over it. As soon as I heard about meditation, I took the class. You
right.
know, so they didn't wake me up. They were already doing it, and I recognized it and ran to it.
Right.
And so perhaps it's becoming more common, and more
yeah.
people are doing it. And I use the metaphor, let's say, a bird flying through a gateway. And so some people are on the nose of the bird, and some on the shoulder, and some on the tail. Well, I think that now we're dear, someone at the door. Excuse me.
Okay.
Hold on, caller. Someone's at the door.
Okay. I'm
sorry.
Okay.
Okay. I'm free now. Sorry. I'm at home, and the neighbor rang the doorbell.
I'm Tim, by the way.
Hi, Tim. Okay. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Can we continue?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I was just pretty much wondering, like, do you think, you know, honestly, they're just waiting, you know, if they're going to be,
yeah.
if they're going to be coming back, or if they're amping us up for something. I really feel like we have to evolve as a species and start to love each other, and like they're just going to wait for that. Until that happens, then, you know, it's just going to be a few random UFO sightings and a few speculations that we've been doing, you know, that we've been doing this for years now.
Okay, well, it all depends on where you're looking, and I think that there's a split between alternative media and the common mainstream media. Mainstream
mm-hmm.
media basically says they're all, you know, malevolent, and they're going to show up maybe at the Olympics at 2012, and we're going to shoot them down.
Right.
Which, you know, that's just waiting to happen. And so even when you're asking the question, and a couple of the other callers, you know, it sounds to me like they're pulling, like, from five different places of things they've heard and putting it into one question.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's something going on, and the benevolent ones are around. Like, I've been channeling.
Yeah.
You know, for
that's
30,
what I'm
40,
hoping for.
30
Jeez.
Or 40 years. But if you look online, there's definitely channeled things from ET saying they're coming to help, they can change things, you know, it's still up to us, but the quarantine has been lifted. They're allowed to show up now, and they're showing up all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much footage on YouTube,
right.
and I wasn't looking at it for a long time, but if you just spend a couple of days looking around, like the E-SETI ranch, I mean, they're using infrared, and they see a lot of different things. So either you've got your eyes and ears closed, and you're saying, no, 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 mainstream media says there's none of that, and, oh,
right.
yeah, I went to a movie, and they're going to come and shoot us down.
Right.
Like, it's propaganda.
It is.
I think both are going on, but honestly, I think that it's, you know, 80% benevolent, and maybe even not much malevolent, except the dark cabal that's making us believe we have to be afraid of them, and they're going to defend us against them.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate all your input.
Okay.
I love you. And
thanks.
And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Wow, Tim, thank you very much for that call. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Bolter.
Hello?
Go ahead, caller.
Yes. First of all, I find this quite fascinating, to say the least. I'm just curious about the aspect that you spoke about, the ancient Egyptians, how they had energy in the pyramids. Now, what exactly, like, when you speak of energy, you mean like electricity the way we know it today, or it seems like different? Like, and for what use did they make of that energy, and like, in what practical terms was it used, if any? You know,
okay.
I'm just curious about
okay.
that aspect.
Okay, so again, we have had propaganda and we've been influenced and we've had certain things told to us about what's possible and what our system is, and we've been told that we're the most advanced of any culture and all this stuff. So it makes it really difficult for us to piece together an idea about something else, and I think most people feel uncomfortable when they've never heard of something and it's new. Now, one of the things that the Pyramid Code has done is it's normalized this idea about the kind of energy and the high-level technology that the ancients would have had. So I'm assuming, caller, that you haven't watched it, because it's 5 hours, 5 television hours, of describing how this technology could have worked and why, with our static energy, why we can't think of it clearly. So our energy is explosion energy, combustion, and polluting. And their energy was working on zero point, and it was implosive and magnetic. It's implosion energy, and it's working on magnetics. And it's subtle energy, and it's zero point energy. And so there are now 6,000 patents that are being blocked by the U.S. government. We have free energy now. We don't need oil. But all of these devices have been suppressed. If you see the movie Thrive, there's a big section on that and on their website as well. And so we've been fooled into thinking we need oil and that we need to create wars for more oil to keep our kind of energy going because it's better and it's all we've got. But nothing could be further from the truth. There's all kinds of safe things. So the Egyptians, they have lots of evidence of electroplating gold. There's all kinds of machine tool marks. There's stones in the Valley Temple that have 11 different cuts on them, and they all fit perfectly. You can't fit a piece of paper between some of these stones. The pyramid is much, much older than they tell us, and it's probably survived 2 or 3 world floods and not fallen down. The Islamics don't like the pyramid, and we don't have the technology to take it down. And people ask me, what if we repaired it and restored it to how it used to be? We don't have the technology for that. So the ancients, they had to have had some kind of power to light things, because many of the crypts have no windows anywhere, and they're underground. And they've got beautiful carvings inside. So there's things like the Baghdad battery that works now. If you find a relic and you do what they did, it makes a low grade of energy. And so they were harnessing microwaves. They were using acoustic resonance. They were using the field of the earth, the Schumann resonance of the earth. Nikola Tesla replicated some of the things that came from Egypt in his Tesla Tower. I think we talked about that in the interview. And, you know, there are passageways that are at certain angles, and it's over a limestone aquifer, and there's water underneath in Long Island, and that's the same as with the Great Pyramid. And so the answer is that this technology existed, and we have been blind to it because we're wearing patriarchal lenses and we don't know how to look at it their way.
Wow. Well, through your research, you're saying this is like 100% that this hour was?
100%, pardon me?
This information that you just said that they had this type of energy, you're quite certain about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's been my life's work, is understanding how it worked and when. And I get a good number of professionals that approach me that have made water pumps that are replications of how the Great Pyramid worked. There's Chris Dunn's work, the Giza Power Plant. He's an engineer. There's many people who have replicated some of these devices, and it's just not known. No one's talking about it. It's tucked away, and if you don't have the question, you can't find the answer. And so most people aren't even looking online for it. But even when the Pyramid Code, when I was building it, the editors were going online looking for evidence of this kind of material. There wasn't a lot there, not because it didn't exist, but because people hadn't published it yet. And so, or it was in scientific journals, Russian scientists measuring consciousness fields. All of this exists, absolutely 100%. Honestly, I spent my life here, but it's not known.
Okay, thank you, caller.
Wow.
We're going to go to another
call. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those great questions. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Carmen Boulder.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes.
Yes. I want to frame this in a little different light. We know that, older pyramids in Ethiopia and down in Nile Valley than Egypt. If we frame this in the ideal of African civilization, we look at the Notre Egyptologist Budge, who was Osiris in the Egyptian resurrection, said that Egypt is no different, Egyptian culture is no different than total African culture, and went on to explain similarities throughout. I'm looking at a book here right now, Nuer Religion, and the Book of the Nuer, and they have a picture as well as a description of numerous pyramids in 1928. So there seems to be a continuity of, quote-unquote, this type of structure, but also numerically when we look at Egyptian culture, 256 as ultimate numbers. If we look at Yoruba culture, 256 to the Ifa. We look at Dogon, Barbara, or Benfica culture, 256, 266. There seems to be a continental-wide philosophy and ideology of ancient cultures that express themselves pyramidically, but also in other stone structures, but also socially. If we frame this Egyptian thing is no different than African culture, then do we come to a different frame of mind and somewhat of a less lenient sense of racism when we start to look at these cultures, particularly John Jackson talks about the black belt of equatorial megalithic structures in ancient times. So my ideas and my research as a professor in this area is that if we frame this in a less universal, quote-unquote, culture and look at it as African culture, particularly those structures in Africa, does it change the dynamic of this alien world or alien influence, such as some people say, oh, the Dogon were influenced by alien culture, even though they had the same numerical structure as the Egyptians, the same star structure, Sirius star.
Those are really good questions, caller, but we're running out of time, so Dr. Bolter a chance to answer.
Go for it.
Okay, I appreciate what you said, and Robert Bovall just wrote a book called Black Genesis, and the Dogon, yes, I studied them as well, and they did align to the idea of Sirius and beings that would have come from Sirius, and Isis is attributed to there. And yes, the cult of Osiris, ideologies trickle all the way through the African continent. I've studied in South Africa as well, where they've got stone circles, and I think that it's more, there's more of an inclination for it being a unified field. I think the ancient Egyptians with the temples and the pyramids, the size of the pyramids, made a more grandiose statement about it, but we don't know what was destroyed in the rest of Africa. However, the whole agenda has been to suppress everything in Africa, including Egypt, make everybody afraid of it, demonize it, think it's just one big war, and then rob the resources. And so, again, we've been tremendously disadvantaged by the way the picture has been painted. And I think that you've raised the points that if anybody goes digging deep, that's what they're going to find. They're going to find more of a unified field, more of a centralized ideology, and it's African culture. It's Africa. Egypt is on the African continent.
Dr. Carmen Bolter, thank you very much for being on In Other News. Again, Dr. Bolter is the writer, director, producer of the five-part documentary series, The Pyramid Code. You can find it online on YouTube as well, but also at thepyramidcode.com. Can you briefly tell listeners what you're working on now?
I'm working on an online learning and social action network called Interactive U, and I'm creating courses, and it's the answer to how our university education perhaps doesn't give us everything we need for many aspects, and then gathering videos, creating videos, and putting them all on this channel.
Dr. Bolter, you're also working on the consciousness documentary.
Yes. Well, it's I've got new equipment from Dr. Konstantin Korkov on measuring consciousness fields and energy vibrational frequencies in sacred spaces and anywhere. You can measure anywhere. And I'm running studies and giving papers at conferences. I'm going to be at Megalithomania in South Africa at the end of July and speaking at a conference in Istanbul in June.
What a great name.
Yeah. So I'm actually in Brazil this year. I'm all over the world, actually. And I'm mostly taking measurements and filming in preparation for presenting original material on interactive.
So exciting. This is fantastic. Thank you once again for being on In Other News, and have a great evening.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye, Joe.
This was a show in remembrance of Dr. Carmen Bolter and her incredible work and research on the pyramids of Egypt and Atlantis. Thank you so much, Dr. Bolter.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.